is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. Today, I am joined by Doug Branson, the Locked On Hornets host, and he writes for the SB Nation site at the Hive. That's the Charlotte Hornets SB Nation centric site. How are you doing today, Doug?
Good. It's football Sunday here in the Queen City, so tailgates are ablazing, and I'm ready to talk Hornets and then probably watch some Panthers.
Yep, I'm same here, ready to watch some Colts because I'm, you know, Indianapolis here. But so I brought on Doug because he is an expert on the Charlotte Hornets, I would say. So a player we're previewing today on the player preview is Al Jefferson, who before coming to the Pacers played with the Hornets basically in Al Jefferson's last great season, which was probably at least his best last season, was about 3 years ago with the Hornets when he put up almost 21 points. I think he made third team All-NBA that year. It was a great year for Al Jefferson. So Jefferson's actually heading into his 14th season this season. So my first question basically for Doug is, what are just your basic thoughts on Al Jefferson?
Well, he's a guy that when he's at his best is a dominant post player. When he's at his very, very best, when he had that All-NBA third-team season in 2013-14, he was a player that had great touch from outside the paint as well and was able to knock down his jump shot. You know, defensively, he's always had issues. He's had better seasons than others when, you know, he – was able to just move around a little better, I guess. He's always going to have to sort of sag down on defense. But then other years, the weight sort of got a hold of him and injuries cropped up and he slowed down a little bit. And those were the seasons that were difficult for him. So it's a little bit up and down for Al Jefferson. But, you know, talk about legacy in Charlotte. I mean, he was one of the first big signings of that Bobcats, you know, second coming of Hornets era. And he meant a lot to the franchise, and it was definitely sad to see him go.
Yeah, you bring that up, and that's really what I kind of wanted to get to is, so Jefferson, with the Pacers, he doesn't have the greatest reputation. You know, he was hurt last year. He was kind of overweight. He struggled at times from the field. But I wanted to understand, what is kind of – you kind of touched it a little bit. What is the Charlotte Hornets Bobcats? I know they switched in his between the first and second season. What is kind of their view of Jefferson? Is he kind of somewhat of a basketball hero in some sense in Charlotte, or is he just kind of, you know, he had a great season and that's it?
No, I think he definitely is viewed here in Charlotte as someone that gave this franchise an identity again and gave them a legitimacy again. I don't think that you would see a Nick Batum here, you know, re-signing with the team to that max deal. I don't think you see that kind of thing happen if Al Jefferson never signs, because I think the Bobcats would have continued into sort of mediocrity at best and not really had a chance to get to the playoffs. And it would have been even more difficult to attract top and second tier talent to this franchise. So I think he did a lot to legitimize Charlotte basketball and certainly make it interesting again. I mean, when the ball went into Al Jefferson's hands in 2013-14 in that season, you were just glued to the screen. You wanted to see what move he was going to pull off next. And a guy of his size to be that agile and to be that dominant was something that Charlotte Hornets fans or Charlotte basketball, pro basketball fans had not seen in a very, very long time. The Bobcats had a playoff season before Al Jefferson, but they didn't have any player of Jefferson's magnitude in terms of his ability to be a mismatch, be a problem for an opposing defense. And again, you know, his role transitioned in that final year in Charlotte, but he was still a problem for really good teams and their defenses when he was on the floor.
Yeah. So I know Pacer fans out there, the Pacers organization wanted to bring in Jefferson to do what he did in Charlotte a little bit, to be the post-presence veteran, you know, a guy who could score off the bench. He was never going to be a starter with the Pacers. I think he knew that when he signed with them, but I think they thought he could be a 12-point guy off the bench who could make some, you know, turnaround, you know, some of his, you know, turnaround floaters type of shots, you know, inside the paint, could put up some points off the bench. So in his peak year in Charlotte, he put up almost 22 points a game. We touched on it earlier. What do you think, you know, he lost some weight this summer. So just, I don't know if you saw that, but the recent picture of him, apparently he's lost, I don't want to say how many pounds, but he looks a lot skinnier than he did last season.
Skinnier than me.
So is that what he needed to do, was lose the weight? Or what does he need to do to get kind of, you know, he might never be a 22-point guy again, but to even be like a 12 to 15-point guy?
Yeah, it's the same kind of story as his final year in Charlotte, which was, you know, the story was he of course, famously gave up Popeye's chicken, his favorite sort of junk food, and he attributed his weight loss in that final year in Charlotte to that. And the reason that he said he did that was because he wanted to preserve his body in a way that his idol Tim Duncan did in later years and stave off injury. And then I think in that final year in Charlotte, he had two injuries, one to his calf and one to his knee, that kept him out a large portion of the middle of the season. And so I don't know, maybe that sort of discouraged. It would, you know, if it were me and I went through all this trouble to lose weight, to not get injured, and then I got injured anyway. I mean, I don't know what that does to sort of the mentality there when weight loss is such a big deal for him. Yeah, I mean, it's tough. It's tough for Al, but I think, you know, he looks good now, and hopefully he can stay healthy. But also, again, I think he's at his best when he's more mobile on defense. He's not going to be a great defender, but when he is more mobile, he at least is somewhat effective. When he's physical on the boards, that was something that the Hornets missed when he left. And, of course, when he's more agile and can, you know, sort of bob and weave and move outside of the paint and knock down his jump shot, then he becomes a serious threat.
Yeah, you touched on his offensive game. You know, Pacers fans may have not seen, you know, what Al Jefferson can really do last season. He was very, you know, limited, to say the least. So an offensive game, you know, we saw touches of it, of his kind of being able to shoot from 12 to 15 foot range sometimes and be able to kind of back guys down. So what was his biggest offensive strength when he was with Charlotte?
Well, obviously, I mean, it was his post game, you know, over half of his possessions were post possessions, and he was always, you know, extremely effective at them in terms of his points per possession. You know, I think probably his signature move was the spin towards the baseline and then, you know, sort of getting all the way up under the basket and scooping the layup. I mean, that was sort of his go-to move. But he also had a really nice floater game off the roll. I mean, and a lot of people, you know, they immediately think of Al Jefferson as the guy who sort of, you know, sets up in the post, seals off his man, and then calls for the ball and waits for the guard to deliver it to him. But he was also a really effective pick-and-roll player. And Kemba Walker was a great pocket passer. And when you combine those two things, you had Jefferson, this big presence that, you know, if you're a smaller defender, you didn't necessarily want to chuck into that guy. And he had that beautiful touch for a big man and could float that ball up in there. You know, again, that's the thing I go back to. He's always been a great post player, but when he was most effective, when he was hitting half of his 2-point attempts, it's because, you know, he had that great baseline mid-range jump shot. He had that floater going and he was making his bunnies, and it was part of the reason that he ended up starting 5 of 7 of the Hornets playoff games 2 seasons ago, after spending most of the second half of that season as their primary bench scorer. He gets elevated to the starting position in that playoff series against Miami because Miami in those first 2 games keyed in on Kemba Walker, you know, and Jeremy Lin, they're two big guard threats, basically shut those guys down, and Marvin Williams from 3. And they had to get Al Jefferson just as a release valve, get the ball to that guy to draw some attention away. And, you know, he was still a threat then. Now, can he regain that ability to draw attention? I think that's a big question for him and the rest of his career.
Yeah, you talk about that playoff series a couple of years ago. That was maybe even part of the reason he was able to get the contract out with the Pacers, because he kind of proved as that counterpunch. So he's not, you know, the way the NBA is shifting, it's shifting to faster, more agile centers. But he does have that ability against a Miami team who has a Hassan Whiteside, who kind of has a bigger guy. The Pistons are another example with Andre Drummond, who can be kind of that counterpunch to a bigger guy that can back guys down and kind of, you know, be kind of a bigger presence on the court, so you don't get kind of – your team isn't being almost bullied around the court. So with the Pacers, Jefferson is probably going to come off the bench as kind of Miles Turner's backup. You know, Pacer fans are worried about that because last season he struggled in that position. But I like that idea. If he can put up, you know, do get back to his offensive style like you're talking about, that he could be, you know, a pretty decent off-the-bench player, because there aren't a lot of, you know, those stretch five centers on a lot of teams' benches. A lot of teams go to a bigger center off the bench because there just aren't a ton of those Miles Turner, Kristaps Porzingis, Karl-Anthony Towns type of backups in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you look at Minnesota, their backup is Gordy Deng. He can shoot the three a little bit, but he's still kind of more of a traditional center in some sense. So with Jefferson, kind of my next kind of thought is, how does he – so we talked about his weight, you know, and how he losing weight is, might help him be more agile. But what else did he do offensively that maybe doesn't have to do with his weight and just translates to just maybe him, you know, he could still do at kind of his older age?
Well, again, I mean, I think if he becomes an effective post player again, then he, you know, part of what made him fit so well within the Hornets offense is that he drew attention, you know, to the post and got guys to step in just a little bit more than they wanted to, and opened up shooters on the outside. And with Jefferson, I think it is about agility. It's also about staying healthy, but it's also about getting up and down the floor and being able to stay on the floor. And again, not be a complete liability on defense. I think those are all rooted in not just his weight, but just his overall, you know, readiness to come into the season. That was an issue in the season before he left. That was an issue of him just sort of not being healthy all year, not being really ready to stay on the floor for big minutes. And you know, Al Jefferson, someone that needs opportunities, needs the ball, needs to be active to be effective. And to do that, sort of you have to be, you know, in shape. You have to be ready to go. So I think that's going to be a big deal for Al Jefferson. And, you know, maybe finding that love of the game again. And I'm sure he wants to be on the court. And I'm sure that last season in Indiana was difficult for him, because he, you know, for the past or his whole tenure in Charlotte, I mean, he was the focus of the offense. Even when he went to the bench, he was still getting significant minutes, still getting significant touches, and he had an ability to be a mismatch against second unit bigs. And, you know, I take the couple of matchups that he had with Miles Turner, and he was able to do some effective things against Turner, because here's the thing, like all of these bigs are turning into sort of mobile bigs who like to hang around the three-point line and then make some moves from there. But Jefferson can become the sort of reaction to that reaction, and that some of these bigs aren't used to dealing with a guy who has a set of post moves. Like it's a little bit of a paper, rock, scissors game that, you know, I'm going to go left, or you're going to go left, and then that slight movement allows me to turn back right. You know, Jefferson was the sort of king of being able to outsmart players in the post. It wasn't just about how agile he was. It was about how smart he was and how he could combine moves to effectively open up space for himself inside the post. And I'm just not sure that a lot of big men in the league are sort of ready for that type of skill. And I think that's where he can expose some matchup issues, but he has to be in shape enough to stay on the floor.
Yeah, that's a great point. I actually agree with you on the fact that the way the NBA has gone to almost – the center has become such a almost kind of small forward type of three-pointer, stay out in the perimeter and don't stand in the lane, that there's going to be the kind of this snapback reaction to when you get a traditional center, he might be able to kind of abuse one of those – because the new center is a thinner, not – you know, he's faster, but he's not as strong as the old previous centers were. And Jefferson has that kind of ability to be a traditional center. And, you know, if – especially if the center he's playing with isn't like – a 35% three-point shooter, Jefferson can back people down and wear them out. And that's kind of something that can help on the other side of the floor. If he can wear out the opposing small, let's say a Miles Turner kind of center, because he's thinner, wear him out on the defensive end, you know, then when Turner has the ball on offense, he's more tired. Jefferson can expose that because he's not the best defender like we talked about, but he's smart. You know, he's got that veteran, you know, ability to see when things are kind of like what to make the right play. You know, when a player looks weak, he knows how to take advantage of that. So that's a great point, because I do think it's eventually someday the center is going to snap back to the more traditional center, because you're you've almost gone too far from where the from what the center was to what it is now.
Yeah, I mean, if there is a center that comes out that does have the physicality and the ability, the foot speed to play the pick and roll out beyond the free throw line, but also has that same skill set as an Al Jefferson, then that's a whole brand new form of unicorn that I'm not sure we've seen quite yet. Maybe Karl Anthony Towns sort of comes close to that, but I think his post moves are still a little bit kind of underdeveloped. And he uses a lot of the physical gifts that God gave him to make some things happen, as opposed to Al Jefferson, where, I mean, you just look at, he was a ballet dancer in the post in his prime. He was, you know, again, comboing these moves in a way that was just extremely impressive and was a work of art. And it wasn't something that I think he was doing it instinctually, but I mean, it was so precise. I mean, you could count the moves, you could see them happen. And he was a master painter when it came. And that's why, Big Al's Paint Shop is the sort of promotion that the Hornets did. Because I think it had a dual meaning for his all NBA third team, that they did this big promotion, Big Al's Paint Shop. And, obviously he dominated the paint, but I also think he was an artist down there as well.
Yeah. I think of it as more like if you could take DeAndre Jordan in a shooting version of him, that's like if as guy came out that could has that yeah, size, yeah, ability to protect the rim like him, but can actually, make a 12 footer consistently, hit his free throw, that player might be, one of the best centers, and it would be a totally different, change the game type of way for the center position.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll see it, I think. I mean, it's just a matter of time. These things tend to ebb and flow, and I think you'll see it again. And I'm looking forward to it because I enjoy sort of the physicality of two bodies up against one another in the paint, trying to jockey for position. And then again, I it's a paper, rock, scissors game. I'm going to go this way and you've got to react pretty quickly. And if you don't, then I've got the space I need to make that play. And Jefferson, was a master of that. And it was, honestly, it was disappointing to see what happened to him in Indianapolis, because I think he could have, I don't know necessarily if the Hornets were ready. I mean, obviously it was going to be a pay cut if he stayed with the Hornets, because they spent a ton to bring back Nick Batum and Marvin Williams. So I don't know if he was willing to take that, or if the Hornets were really even willing to keep Al Jefferson on the bench. But I think the depth issues that the Hornets had last season could have, and it all happened at the center position, so it could have really been alleviated by having an Al Jefferson in there if he was in the same kind of physical condition that he was last season, and hopefully, he would have avoided those injuries. But I think the Hornets were more looking towards a rim protector, and that's something that, he's a physical rebounder, Al Jefferson, but he certainly, no one would mistake him for a rim protector.
Yeah, he's not a rim protector. That's his one kind of really big flaw. If you're talking about flaws, it's the rim protecting ability. So you talked about they maybe didn't want to put him on the bench. So leadership wise, Jefferson was kind of brought into the Indiana to be a little bit of a mentor to Miles Turner, kind of be a veteran presence. So did he have any kind of I know a lot of young guys, they had Kemba Walker was young when Jefferson came in. Did he have any big leadership role with the Hornets?
I think he was always, in terms of his conduct up until that last season when he got dinged for the pot violation, for the anti-drug violation. I mean, he was, sort of a model player on and off the court. I don't know if he was necessarily the biggest voice in the locker room. I think that's always been Kemba Walker's role. Now I will say this, when Al Jefferson didn't make really a big deal about going to the bench. I mean, he was very team oriented. I think he made it clear that he wanted, he didn't want to go to the bench and then just sort of languish there and not be a factor. I think his, he always wants to be a factor in whatever's going on. And it sounds like from what I read, that's what frustrated him about last season with the Pacers, is that he wasn't able to be a factor at all. And you saw that in with the Hornets, even when he did go to the bench for that second half of the season, he got plenty of touches and he was the focal point of that second unit. So, I think if he has indeed prepared his body and prepared his mind in the right way and has a great training camp, I think he's, you know, guys like that, I think always have that mentality of, I want to be the guy until my body absolutely says I can't be that anymore.
Yeah. So do you think he's, do you think he's one of those guys that if he's long, he's healthy, could, I mean, he's now going to his like 14th season, he could play maybe 17, 18 years, be one of those continually off the bench center players, just lingering around the league from team to team, basically kind of as that team kind of on the rise kind of guy.
I mean, look, if he stays in shape, and if he's able to, if some of these injuries that he's acquired over the past couple of years haven't wrought long-term effects on his mobility, and that's a big question mark, I think. But if that's not the case, then absolutely, why not? I mean, again, we've talked about it in this interview already. His skill set is becoming rarer and rarer, but it's not becoming less effective. I mean, when he's gotten significant playing time, you look at the synergy numbers, and in those times that he's gotten that significant playing time, he's been an efficient offensive player and a release valve for when a play breaks down. That's when you need Al Jefferson. You don't always, you know, as his career has progressed and as he's gotten a little older, he's not necessarily, you know, a first option anymore. You don't come down and set up a lot of plays for Al Jefferson. But if you get into your first action and the opposing defense figures you out, he's a guy that can bail you out of so many plays. And he did that for Charlotte. And I think it's one of the things they certainly missed last season, the ability to, once, you know, first action, second action fails, what happens? Too many times it would end up as a bad jump shot for the Hornets, when in years past, that ball would have found its way to Al Jefferson, and he would have not necessarily always make the shot, but it would have been certainly a more effective shot than they put up last season.
Yeah, and I think also part of his strength is going to be his ability just to accept his kind of role now. I mean, you know, you talked about how he maybe didn't want to go to the bench and be a nobody, but if he accepts his role as kind of a 15-minute off-the-bench guy, and his role is just to put up buckets, basically, then yeah, he can be effective at that. Because, you know, he got hurt, and that really hurt him last year. Once he got hurt, that his stats just kind of fell off a cliff. Uh-huh. But for the first 15 or 20 games last season, he was putting up 8 to 10 points off the bench. You know, he was shooting, I think he had a couple games where he was 6 of 7 on the floor. I mean, you know, it's what you want out of a bench player. You know, when you have a guy come off the bench, you don't need him to put up 25 points. You want him to put up 10, 12 and just keep the game going, so you don't like lose. Basically, you don't want the bench to blow the game for you. You want the game to keep going and to stay in the game. And he was able to do that because no matter his defensive flaws, he put up enough points to counter that out.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think he was more than accepting of his bench role. He would, you know, he would say over and over, like, I don't care if I'm starting or on the bench as long as I'm helping this team win. And I think the definition of that was, as long as I'm, you know, able to still be an offensive factor, as long as I'm still, you know, able to get the touches that I need to get in my groove and be effective and put up the points that I think I can put up. And I think the Hornets were able to do that for him, and he was rewarded in that playoff series by getting the starting role back in 5 of those 7 games. And I still think if he can get healthy, and now that he's lost a little bit more weight, you know, can he be an offensive factor again? I sure hope so, because I think he's a good guy. And I think he, you know, means a lot to Charlotte, means a lot to this franchise. So I will certainly be cheering for him, unless, of course, they're playing the Hornets.
As always, the presenting sponsor of the Locked On Pacers podcast is SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the number one ticket aggregating site around. At least it is in my book. I've been telling my listeners for a while to use SeatGeek. I've used it twice this summer for Reds tickets and for the Kendrick Lamar concert in Chicago. I've used it in the past for Pacers tickets. It's just an awesome site. Like I said, I've been harping on this every week, but I'm telling you, if you're going to buy tickets to any Pacers game this season, you need to use SeatGeek. It's got this great thing where it adds in the fees already, so you don't get kind of surprised by the ending price. You know what you're paying. It shows you the exact price you're going to pay. No worries that you're going to have some $15 charge in of it for convenience fees, basically. And then also, it tells you whether you're getting a good deal on your ticket. So there's this thing called a deal score. You want to get somewhere above 65, 70, kind of a green dot will show up. And if you do, it means you're getting a great price on your tickets. And if you use the promo code LOMBA, you get a discount on your tickets. So remember to use the promo code LOMBA when you use SeatGeek to buy your Pacer tickets this season. Because I know if you're listening to this podcast, you're definitely going to at least one Pacer game this season. And now back to the podcast.
So You talk about his meaning to Charlotte. So his contract situation, he basically has an option for next season. The Pacers can pick it up or not pick it up. It's at about 9.7, close to $10 million, give or take. So, you know, a lot of Pacer fans and, you know, me included, kind of think he probably won't be back next season, especially if he has the season he had last season. Do you see Charlotte maybe wanting to bring him back? I mean, you seem to have an affinity for him. You know, I know you're not every Charlotte fan, but do you think kind of Charlotte fans will want to see him be brought back, especially if the Charlotte Hornets are back in the playoffs again next season and brought in kind of as a veteran presence?
I think that Al Jefferson means a lot to the fan base in terms of what he did, but it's sort of in the past what he did. You know, I think that the team has moved on. They've signed Cody Zeller long-term. Mm-hmm. They seem happy with that choice. And Cody Zeller put up great numbers, and the team was pretty horrific without Cody Zeller on the floor. Now they've added Dwight Howard, and they'll have him guaranteed for next season as well. So I just think philosophically, this franchise has moved away from what they needed from Jefferson. I think that Kemba Walker has evolved into a truly like top, you know, top 15, top 20 player. And I think that I just don't know where he would necessarily fit with them, but I'd never say never, because again, I think, you know, they left it seemingly on amicable terms. So I don't want to say never, but I do think that the Hornets have sort of philosophically moved on from what they were wanting from Al Jefferson and what they're, you know, moving forward with.
Yeah, actually, I'm something embarrassing. You know, before I started doing research a couple of days for this podcast, I actually almost forgot Dwight end up with the Hornets, just with all the NBA stuff been going on.
You're not the only one.
I was like, you know, with the Carmelo trade yesterday and then the Kyrie stuff all summer, I just I knew it subconsciously, but until I looked up, I'm like, oh, it's right, Dwight's there for 2 years. Like, that kind of just went above my head because there's just so much stuff has been happening. So contract-wise, so he's probably – he's probably overpaid right now. So when he signed his contract with the Pacers, what did you think of him getting 3 years, 30 at the time?
I thought it was an overpay, but I thought it was, you know, we were in this weird, you know, a lot of money to throw around. And I felt like someone was going to come along, especially after that performance in the playoffs. I thought someone would come along and give him more money, certainly, than the Charlotte Hornets were going to be able to offer. And I felt like there was probably a better than not chance that he would take that. And, you know, he did with the Pacers. You know, I think that he's probably going to have to face a new financial reality after this contract. But, you know, c'est la vie. That's the life of an NBA player. And to say this, I mean, he's had a long NBA career and has had a presence, and he was the face of one franchise. And that's a pretty special thing.
Yeah, he's made like close to $120 million in his career. So even if he has to adjust to a new financial, being paid less, hopefully, I mean, you know, he's made a ton of money. So hopefully he's good for his future. He should be, at least, you would think. So after this Pacer contract, is he just become basically a veteran minimum kind of guy, you think, the rest of his career? Does he maybe get a 2-year contract, or is just 1-year deal to 1-year deal, hoping to stay around in the league?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I think probably 1 year. Yeah, I mean, you know, just trying to guys bringing him in and seeing if he fits. And I don't know if teams would necessarily, with his age and injury history, and, you know, as effective as he is offensively, the liabilities that he brings defensively, just not sure that teams would be willing to commit multiple years. But, you know, I'm no market expert. The market has been a mystery to me these past couple of years, and what guys are getting and what they aren't getting. So one can never tell, but that would be my guess.
Yeah. So just kind of end this podcast and kind of towards my final question. So projecting Jefferson for next season. So I kind of have him right now as hopefully being an 8 points a game kind of guy. He was last in the Pacer, maybe a little bit more. What do you see? So if you were to give his points and rebounds, let's start there. Sort of what do you think he projects to?
Yeah, like 8 and 4. I think if he can give the Pacers 8 and 4, I think, and certainly I know that Al Jefferson will want to do more than that. But I think if he can do that off the bench, then, you know, he's going to be effective. And but really, I think less than points and rebounds is, can he stay on the floor? You know, can he Can he pile up the minutes? Can he sort of do enough early in the season to draw some more attention to himself, to make guys raise their eyebrows and go, man, you know, maybe we got to pay attention to this Jefferson guy again. He's lost some weight and, you know, he's effective in the post again. And that's what's going to really help. If he's not only a mismatch inside, but also draws, again, just one guard taking a step back to try to dig down, I mean, that's going to open up shooting for the Pacers. And I think that's more than just the sort of stats and the points and the rebounds. If he can start to do that for that bench unit, that's going to go a long way.
Yeah, I agree with you that it's about games for him. I mean, we talk, you know, obviously he doesn't want to put up 2 points a game, but if he, it's whether he can hit 60 to 70 games. That's the key. If he hits this at mark, then hopefully he'll be an effective player, you know, at 60 to 70 games at 15 minutes a game. So my very last question, you talked about the ability of his pick and roll. You know, I wanted to finish on this basically. So if he's lost weight and if he is agile still, you think he can be an effective pick and roll player with, let's say, a player like Victor Oladipo or Lance Stevenson or Darren Collison in some sense?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, he's always been great, great at catching the ball off the roll and just has, when I think he's been at his best, he's had that touch. And there have been times, I think, in those last two seasons where he had strangely lost that touch. And it was strange to all of us watching when he would go through those moments. But the cool thing about Al Jefferson is that he's a pretty resilient player. Like, he doesn't stay, you know, he may have a bad stretch of games where he's, you know, going 4 of 11 as opposed to 7 of 11. But, you know, he's always been a player that just sort of knows who he is, confident in his ability, and rebounds as an offensive player. So, hopefully he can be an effective pick and roll player. I think if he's lost weight, he'll certainly want to. I mean, it's a part of the game that he's enjoyed over the years, but he's also going to want his post touches. I mean, again, 50% of his offense for the past couple of years has come from the post. Got to let the big dog eat. But he's been more than willing to attack in the pick and roll.
Yeah. So what's going on with Locked On Hornets right now? What's your sort of, I know the season's 3 weeks away, hopefully now. And I think we're under 25 days almost being the season. What's going on with the Locked On Hornets podcast?
Well, media day is on Monday. Locked On Hornets will be there covering all of the action. And we've got training camp coming up. Obviously, this is an interesting team, the Hornets. As you said, Dwight Howard arriving. Not a lot of people know about it. This mysterious guy named Dwight Howard on the cover of Sports Illustrated. You've also got Malik Monk, who is a big deal and could be an electrifying rookie, but missed all summer because of an ankle issue. So he's a mystery too. This is a mysterious team, and we're looking forward to covering all of the action here on Locked On Hornets.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Malik Monk just for the fact that he fell so far in the draft that I think he has some huge motivation, just like, I want to destroy this league kind of player. So maybe some of Michael Jordan rubs off on him. So thank you for joining me on the Locked On Pacer podcast. You know, for all the Pacer podcast listeners out there, there's going to be a couple more player previews coming later this week. There's also going to be this new thing called the update. We're going to do a 12-minute update basically every day once the season really begins. We're going to start doing it preseason week, and we'll transition it to doing it every day during the season. Thank you again, Doug, for joining me today. And all those listening out there, I hope you have a great rest of your day.
Napa Know How. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa Know How.
Napa Know How.
At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum 3 items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.